You're listening to the Refined Hippie Podcast. I am your host, Rebecca Henson, and welcome to episode number 3. My guest today is the super inspirational Kate Moon. Kate is a yoga instructor here in Charleston, South Carolina. That's how she and I met. She is also a Lululemon ambassador, which apparently is a new title for her since we recorded this podcast. So congrats, Kate. She is also the director of yoga at Hilo Fitness. Kate has overcome addiction and extreme family heartache to come out on the other side, finding light, love, and a serious community that she could have never even dreamt for. But the path here was not easy. It never is, you know? As she was healing her body and life from pretty much a decade of pain, she found yoga. Or perhaps yoga found her, really. After hearing her story, it definitely sounds like it was serendipitous. It immediately clicked with her, and something shifted within her like never before. We chat about her life transformation, yoga, traveling, Bali, and some serious experiences that cannot be discounted as anything other than complete universal divine intervention. It's just completely crazy. She is totally one of the most inspirational and motivational people I think I have ever come across. And I'm pretty sure you're going to agree after listening to her. So without further ado, here is my interview with the lovely Kate Moon. Hi, Kate.
Hi.
Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me. Sorry, my voice is a little bit cracky.
It's okay.
It's from teaching.
You teach a lot.
We had a little mic trouble last night, so I talked a little bit louder than normal.
Was it working today?
It was. Well, that's good. It was good today. So yeah. I got a little bit of a rest, but this tea is helping.
Hopefully the tea and the honey.
Yes. We'll do the something. Expensive $50 jar of honey.
Shh.
It's okay. We're allowed to splurge on things that make us feel good.
It's Manuka honey, if anybody has ever heard of that. And it has magical properties.
Basically, I'm going to leave here a unicorn.
She's going to be a unicorn.
It's going to be great.
It's going to be super awesome.
So excited.
So I was thinking about when I first met you was when you came to Hilo to be a yoga instructor, which was probably like a year ago. Or longer?
Yeah, just about a year ago. I started in May of last year, so Just over a year.
Oh, wow. It's like, you just hit your anniversary.
Just hit the anniversary. Yeah.
And I remember when you start class, you say your name and like what the class we're in or whatever. And I remember when you said your name was Kate Moon, and I was just like, oh my gosh, she has the coolest freaking name for a yoga instructor.
You know, it's funny you say that because you don't know how many times I get asked what my real last name is. People think it's like a yoga stage name.
Right.
And I'm like, I'm not a stripper, guys. Like, I don't have a stage name for yoga. Like, this is my name. But I get it. It is a really cool name for yoga.
It's a super cool name.
Yeah.
What's the origin of Moon?
So when I had to do one of those ancestry projects in elementary school, I traced it back to southern Wales to a group of men known as the Moon Riders.
What?
And they were known as that because they only came out at night on horseback. It was almost like, I hate to say it, but like a little bit of a clan.
So
they were known as the Moon Riders, and they would set villages on fire.
Oh, dear.
And like take women and children.
Oh, so they weren't very
really
nice.
Really terrible, oh. Yes. So I hate having that background, and I don't know if it's 100% accurate.
Right.
But as a little girl, this is what I found. So they were actually like annexed from southern Wales, like, okay, you guys gotta go.
Yeah.
And came to the Americas, and they dropped the riders, and they were known as the Moons.
Oh, wow.
So it started as a group of men known as the Moons, and then we just kept multiplying. but I am not one of a clan, so.
You are not going to set people's houses on fire. No, please don't.
No, no, that's not me. Okay. So if anything, I'll bring houses flowers or something kind. Good.
Yeah. 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 The other reason that I really love your name is because when I was in probably seventh grade, I was obsessed with Sailor Moon.
Oh my gosh.
Which is an anime cartoon. Yes. That came on Cartoon Network after school. It was like 3:30, and I would go home and watch it every day, and I was obsessed. And I had a Sailor Moon club that we would meet at recess.
Oh my goodness.
That I was very serious about.
Yes.
But everybody else wasn't as serious as I was. But I was.
Right. This was like your world. Yeah.
Yeah. And they were supposed to watch Sailor Moon after school, but they didn't.
Yeah.
It was like their homework, but
they didn't. So I had a Barbie haters club. Oh. So total opposites.
No, I didn't like Barbie, though. I liked Sailor Moon.
Gosh, maybe I am a little bit of a clan person. Ooh. I don't know. This is just coming up for me now. So I would actually steal all of my sister's Barbies, and I would take their heads off.
Oh, wow.
This is really embarrassing to admit right now. God. I would take their heads off and put them in her closet, and then I would hang the bodies from my treehouse. And it was called the Barbie Haters Club. I was very much a tomboy
growing
up.
You've come a long way, yeah, from taking heads off of Barbies.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of really disturbing.
Well, so I didn't like Barbies.
Okay, yeah, that was the whole point. I just didn't like them.
My mom would make me play with them when my cousin came to visit.
Mm.
And I would do it because my cousin and I are like 2 weeks apart in age, and she really loved Barbies. And so my mom would say, you know, and she lived in a different state, so she would come visit, and my mom would make me play with Barbies with her. So I was also not a Barbie
not
person.
A fan.
I have two older brothers, so I was a mix of, you know, I could go, I was in a tree, but I was also in a dress. But then I went through a tomboy stage as well,
mm-hmm,
that I only wore Umbros for 2 years straight. Mm. So
I only wore Harley Davidson motorcycle clothes. And I went through a phase where I made my mother sew Harley Davidson patches on my clothes, like on a leather vest or on the back pocket of my jeans. And then even went as far as asking her to sew chains on my socks so that when I walked around, it was like this Western clink, or I don't even know.
Where did you get the idea for that?
So her friend rode Harleys, uh-huh, and took me to a Harley thing, and would pick me up every Sunday and take me on backcountry roads on the Harley Davidson. And it was just really soothing for me as a kid. And so I just, yeah. It was a thing. It was a phase. It was great.
How old were you?
Probably like 7.
Oh.
Yeah. Really young. Really young.
Wow. You were a badass 7-year-old, weren't you?
I was. I just have always kind of gone to my own beat.
Yeah.
And not been necessarily among the norm.
Yeah. I know how that is.
Yeah. Even in high school. In high school, I did a good job of like wearing a mask, mm-hmm, I guess, when I got to high school is where like some tormented years came up, as I think everyone can kind of resonate, mm-hmm, with that feeling as you're trying to like find out who you are. You know, I was president of every club, captain of cheerleading, captain of soccer, you know, National Honor Society and all these things.
Yeah.
But like on the weekends, I was like partying, you know, but like no one knew about it.
Right.
So it was like,
like, no, the adults never did.
I appeared to be the norm, but then, like, behind closed doors, I was, like, the complete opposite.
Wow.
Just, like, trying to find out who I was.
Right.
So.
Right. And so, when did you get into yoga? Is kind of, like, a recent.
Very kind recent. Of recent thing. Yeah. Very recent. So, I found yoga a little bit less than 5 years ago. And that started, you know, I knew what yoga was. You mm-hmm. know, I had some family members who, you know, at a younger age tried to buy me a yoga mat, but that just ended up in the closet.
Yeah.
But I come from a background that I'm very open about, you know, recovering from a drug and alcohol addiction. And so less than 5 years ago, I was in a 90-day rehabilitation center, which I self-admitted myself to because I was just sick and tired of myself, basically, and I needed like a better way to live. So I admitted myself with my family's help, and it was in rehab during one of my sister's visits that she introduced yoga to me, because I was really suffering from lack of sleep, and mm-hmm. my legs were restless and my body was restless and my mind was wandering. And yes, maybe part of it was like detoxing my body from those toxins.
Totally.
But at the same time, I needed somewhere for the energy and the emotion to go. Mm-hmm. And so my sister taught me by the bank of a lake one day when she picked me up, some basic Sun A salutations, Sun B salutations, warrior two, a triangle pose here and there. Mm-hmm. Very, very basic. And it made me feel really good. I was weak. I couldn't even chaturanga. I told you that.
Yeah, I
know. You know, my body would just collapse to the ground, but it was something to work on and mm-hmm. work towards and send healthy attention to. Mm-hmm. So I brought these movements of yoga back to my rehabilitation center, which happened to be an all women's program. And every morning during our free time, I would do yoga with the girls. And I mean, I was the teacher and I had no idea what I was doing, but we would close our eyes and we would attempt to meditate and just move our bodies. And it made me feel really, really good. So once I moved to Charleston, I was running, literally, going for a run and happened to run past a yoga studio on King Street, which was Charleston Power Yoga. Mm-hmm. And I ran past and they had a flyer. I was like, oh my gosh, yoga, I know this. So I looked at their flyer and it just so happened they were about to host a free community class. So I stood outside those doors because at the time I was living in a halfway house on food stamps and just trying to rebuild my life in a sober way. And I was craving community of mm-hmm. health, of fitness, of a healthy mindset of any kind. So I knew I had to be in there and I could afford free.
Free is always good.
Free is good. So I stood outside of those doors and waited in line. And that first yoga class just changed the game for me, changed me completely. I had, you know, through addiction and through the baggage that came with addiction of physical abuse from others, emotional abuse, mental abuse from myself, not to mention just the abuse of all the toxins that were going mm-hmm. into my body. I had developed such a negative relationship with my body mm-hmm. and who I was that I couldn't even stand to look in the mirror. Hello, kitty.
Sorry. You're interrupting Eva Snow. That is my cat, Eva Snow. She was very vocal as
and
well.
And she is beautiful.
She wants to be in the interview. So
she does.
Yeah. So so it came at the perfect time, clearly.
It came at the perfect time. I was just looking to rebuild my life, and mm-hmm. I needed help mm-hmm. to do so. Mm-hmm. I knew that I couldn't just start a new life on my own, that I needed community. So it happened. That class just flipped my world upside down, and that studio allowed me to clean their floors and wash their towels in exchange for free yoga. And it was beautiful. And I'll never forget those people and that opportunity because I don't know where my life would be without that mm-hmm. because that's what I needed. So that's how it entered my life. And now here I am.
Here you are.
Yeah.
Do you think that if you had been exposed to yoga before, you know, you were in that place, like trying to heal, it probably would not have, wouldn't have stuck, or you wouldn't have been as interested?
I wasn't ready. Yeah. Like I think if it would have been introduced to me, I would have brushed it off mm-hmm. Very quickly. Because for me at that time, anything that didn't involve drinking or drugging was just like not a priority for me. Mm-hmm. And until I came to the realization that I needed to make a change, mm-hmm. I wasn't looking at anything of a healthy lifestyle whatsoever.
Yeah.
You know? So I think it came right at the exact time where I had already come to realize that I needed help, mm-hmm. you know, and I was willing to do anything I needed not to go back to the old way of living.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's backtrack mm-hmm. to how you became an addict or an addict. What do you think the process was that...
So there's a lot of different like studies and research and theories on, mm-hmm. you know, who's an addict and why, you know, and I do come from a long line of it in my family. Mm-hmm. My real mother's side of the family is your traditional like Irish mm-hmm. Catholic family. We're the O'Mahony Society in Ireland. And so we just come from a long line of drinking and, you know, a couple of family members here and there. My mother was also in and out of rehabs as I was growing up as a little girl.
So you'd already been around it
too. I'd already been around it. I was very exposed to it. Mm-hmm. I was very exposed to the disaster that it had the ability to create mm-hmm. within the home and mm-hmm. within someone's own mind and state of being. So I kind of thought to myself that I had enough knowledge surrounding it that that would never be me mm-hmm. because I would be able to see that it was happening and stop it before it got too bad. Mm-hmm. That's what I thought. Now I know that that's not the case. Mm-hmm. I do believe the disease of addiction, alcoholism, all of it to be a progressive disease, mm-hmm. just like any other disease. Call it an autoimmune disease mm-hmm. or an allergic reaction.
Heart disease.
Yeah. And if gone untreated, it will progressively get worse. Mm-hmm. And that's what was happening to me. Mm-hmm. It was progressively getting worse. And then before I knew it, it was too late. And I couldn't not think about it every second of every day. I couldn't wake up and not go directly to the refrigerator. I couldn't wake up and, you know, not just go to the store if I was out. Mm-hmm. It was night and day, hour, minute, every breath. That's all I thought about. And I was willing to push anyone and everyone out of the way and hurt anyone and everyone I needed to get what I needed. Mm-hmm. And that resulted in doing really, really destructive hurtful things to myself mm-hmm. To get what I needed from who I needed it from. Mm-hmm. And that started a chain of just the really bad relationship with my body.
Mm-hmm. Were there any times that you, because this was a course of what, like 10, it was almost a decade that it was in and out? Or
so the first time I used any sort of drug, I was 11 years old. The first time I started truly drinking, I was probably 13. I can remember my first drunk experience, and I knew from that very first drink that I was very, very different from the rest of the people I was drinking with.
The way it affected you?
The way it affected me, because I blacked out immediately, and I spent the night with my head in a crock pot getting sick because that's all I could find. Really classy. Really classy here, folks.
You got to do what you got to do.
Yeah, you got to do what you got to do. I mean. But it was the first time I just felt all my inhibitions go away, mm-hmm. right? The insecurity of what I say or how I act or how I stand or what I don't say, that all went away and I just didn't care. Yeah. And I felt for the first time like a powerful human being, like I was being noticed. And that for me was really something at mm-hmm. that time in my life. And I remember waking up the next day and we went to Burger King and we were standing in line for that greasy food those hash browns.
Which that's what you, when you drink a lot, that's what you crave.
Yeah,
you, know?
It's you just crave like, it.
Yeah,
and,
unhealthy food.
I remember one of my older sister's friends saying, oh my gosh, I bet you'll never do that again. That was a disaster last night. And I remember thinking in that moment, actually, I could really use a drink right now. At that young of an age, after my first drunk, I remember thinking, no, like I'm ready now. And I knew in that moment, like something was very, very different for me.
Wow.
So, you know, and now thinking of it as an allergy really helped me come to accept the way I need to act going forward. And someone put it into perspective for me, shellfish allergy. Right? Like we're aware we have a shellfish allergy. So you're not going to go to Red Lobster and order king crab legs and a lobster tail.
Yeah.
You just aren't because you know the effects it's going to have.
Right.
Right. And so knowing that I have an allergy and willfully taking a drink or a drug and putting it in my body, it's going to have an effect on me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just like a shellfish allergy. I'm putting myself at risk for death. You know,
that's a really great way to look at it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that really helped me accept that like it is a disease.
Mm-hmm.
And we always have a joke, me and my friends who are also sober. If people ask me why I don't drink, I'm like, oh, I'm allergic. And they're like, allergic? I'm like, yeah, I break out in handcuffs. So cute. No one wants to see me that way.
Nobody wants to see that. No. I think it's interesting when you say how, you know, when you were drinking, how, or drunk or whatever, how powerful you felt, because I feel like I have definitely felt that in the past, like being tipsy, like you feel like all your inhibitions, like I can just talk to anyone, like I'm free, blah, 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 blah. But recently what I've read about that is that it actually numbs your vibration. That alcohol numbs your vibrational.
It's a depressant.
Yeah. Which is funny that it's actually numbing your aura or whatever, but you feel like it's not. I know. Like, isn't that the weirdest thing?
It is very, very strange. And I think, too, because we use it to a certain extent where we, like, have those kind of, like, loose inhibitions.
Yeah, you want to dance and you're like.
Right.
Yeah.
But then when we overuse, then it's, like, that depressant, you know, and, like, we really start to kind of like come down or get really dark or angry or whatever have you.
So I read something really interesting and I wrote it down about alcohol, that the meaning, the Arabic word, it translates directly from the Arabic word meaning body eating spirit.
Oh my goodness.
Isn't that crazy?
That is insane.
And that it gives root to the origins of the Middle Eastern folklore as a ghoul. And a ghoul is defined as an evil demon that eats people's souls and bodies.
Oh my goodness.
And so a ghoul is also another word for that would be spirit. And we call alcohol spirits.
Yes.
Isn't that weird?
That is really interesting. Mm-hmm. Thanks for sharing that because that really makes
I don't know where I read that. And then I wrote it down because I was like, that is crazy.
That hits the nail on the head.
Hits the nail on the head. Yeah. And then it was talking about how excessive amounts, you know, you might black out. So when that happens, it's like the good soul, your real soul is like leaving because the environment is so toxic and just like it has to get out
there.
And that
ghoul enters. And when I think of a ghoul, I think of like darkness.
Darkness, a demon. Yeah, a demon. Totally a demon.
And that's funny. I was actually today in my yoga classes, I was talking about what the word guru means. And so guru is anyone or anything that can bring lightness into dark.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So, you know, we often express the word guru as like, oh, this person is my guru or this person's my guru. But we actually have the power within ourselves to be our own gurus. Oh. And we actually are our most powerful guru because we're our biggest teacher.
Right.
And we have the power and the ability to make the internal shift of bringing lightness into dark, into any situation or emotion or feeling, right? Everything starts within. Mm-hmm. So we actually have the ability to be our own gurus.
That's awesome. Because in my mind, I think of a guru as somebody who's enlightened, who's already achieved, you know, greatness. They know everything or whatever,
enlightened,
right?
Yeah.
Enlightened,
light. Yeah. Yeah. But really, we're our own best gurus.
We're all our best gurus.
Yeah. No more ghouls, only gurus.
Only gurus. Yeah.
Well, that's really interesting.
I know. I don't drink that much. Ever since I got sick, the more research I did about just how bad alcohol is in general for your body, you know? So, but I maybe drink once every 2 weeks. But then more that I've listened to several podcasts recently about, one with Rich Roll. Do you know Rich Roll?
I don't.
So you used to be a runner, right? You like ran all the time.
Yes.
So Rich Roll is an ultra marathon runner. He was an alcoholic. He like went through this whole, you know, healing journey. And now he has a podcast. He's plant-based. So he's also like a big advocate for that. But he's like an ultra marathon runner. But he had somebody on the other day who has this thing called like no beer for a year or something. It's kind of like a campaign trying to get people to drink less. And his thing was that he wasn't even an alcoholic. He just realized how often he was drinking. That it was like, you know, everybody talks about this moderation thing. But is that really like so good? I don't know, you know?
Yeah.
Because then once he started like looking at how much he was drinking, it was like he had a problem. I mean, it was all the time.
Right.
You know, like it can snowball.
And I think it's up to like an individual to self-diagnose
yes.
that this or this and type of disease.
And to ask for help. I think
and that, to ask for help. Yeah. Because I'm not going to sit there and look at someone's habits or patterns yeah. and be like, you're an alcoholic yeah. or, yeah. you know, like that's for someone to kind of diagnose on themselves. And all I can do is kind of attract a healthier way of living through my actions and the way mm-hmm. I show up in the world. And that's what I hope to be for people is this light of hope.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of if they are having a dark time, and that's why I am so open about my past and my history with it all, because I've had so many people approach me that would have had no idea where to turn to mm-hmm. had I not been vocal about it,
mm-hmm.
you know? So I think, you know, there's different types of alcoholic
totally.
Drinkers.
Absolutely.
There's the binge yeah. drinker. There's the everyday drinker. There's, yeah. you know, there's tons of different ways it can be done. And for me, it's like, is it affecting my life?
Mm-hmm.
Is it making my life unmanageable? Am I right. literally powerless? Like, can I take one drink and that be it? Or does it like consume me once mm-hmm. once it hits my lips?
Yeah.
You know? And if it's not making me the best person, then like, I'm good.
Yeah.
No need. Thank
no need.
You.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it took a long while to get to that mindset.
Right.
You know, when I was first kind of newly sober and trying to start this lifestyle
mm-hmm.
of yoga and health and wellness and eating right and not drinking, I still had some tinges of like mm-hmm. resentment. Like, why me? Why do I have this? Why can't I drink like yeah. quote unquote normal people? Yes. Jinx.
No, I see it. I had that experience in a different way from being sick with an autoimmune disease. Why am I not normal?
Right.
But I feel
but
normal.
What is
I am normal.
Normal.
Whatever normal yes. is a terrible term.
But
you
this
know?
Is my new yeah, normal.
Exactly.
And people used to always say like, oh, I'm like a grateful recovering alcoholic. And I'm like, what does that even mean? Why are you grateful to be an alcoholic? You know?
Yeah.
But I get it today because like I don't know if I would be this good of a person had I not gotten to that low point.
Right.
It's almost like we need to like experience the lows, at least in my personal experience. I needed to experience that low to truly like be grateful for the highs,
mm-hmm.
you know, the natural highs.
The
Let me clarify.
Which yoga is a natural high. I mean, that's
really
why no
is.
Wonder
gets,
that's why, you know,
yeah.
that it really resonated.
And you will find that I have found it with a lot of people in recovery.
Mm-hmm.
They seek fitness almost mm-hmm. immediately
yeah.
Because it gets those same endorphins going in our yeah. minds and we start to feel really good about ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm all for it. They say yeah. like, don't replace one addiction with another, but like it helped me yeah. right away because I needed to feel something.
Right.
And
it's only benefiting you. It's not, you know.
Yeah, it's benefiting
not, me. Yeah, you didn't replace alcohol for, you know, some other drug or, you know,
right.
something that was harmful
right.
to yourself or others. And like,
I mean, maybe at one point, you know, it gets to excess for some people and like over-exercising
right.
or things like that. Because it gives them something to obsess over
right.
because that's the disease. We're obsessive and we're compulsive.
Right.
And, but then now years later, I'm able to kind of even that out
mm-hmm.
and I'm not, you know, running 75 miles a week or whatever crazy things I was doing, you know, some of it by choice, some of it not.
Literally, that's insane.
Yeah.
I don't think I've run 75 miles in my life.
Well, you know, there was that point in my life, I think I had told you last week, where when I got out of rehab and I was living in the halfway house, mm-hmm. I didn't have a car, I didn't have money for the bus, I didn't have a means of transportation, but in order to keep my bed and a roof over my head, I had to get a piece of paper signed that says, like, I'm making X, Y, and Z
yeah.
meeting
right.
that's keeping helping me keep sober.
Right.
And so the closest meeting to my house was 9 miles away. So I literally had to lace up my shoes, run 9 miles, get a piece of paper signed, be in a meeting for an hour. And then some days I got a ride home. Some days I didn't. Sometimes people would give me bus money. But on the bad days, if you want to call it a bad day,
yeah.
every day's been beautiful since I've been sober.
Right.
More beautiful than they were in the past.
Right.
I would have to run 9 miles back. So then it was 18 miles in one day. add that on every day of the week, you know?
Crazy.
Yeah. And so it became actually a beautiful thing in my life because running was my first form of meditation. Mm-hmm. It was the time that I got to spend with myself and truly clear my head out of all the nasty thoughts I had going because I was still working through a lot mm-hmm. of things I had done and said and not done, not said. And it gave me time with me and the universe, mm-hmm. you know, an energy that was greater than myself. And at the time I had been living so selfishly for so long mm-hmm. by only taking what I needed and not thinking about others and not how I can be of service to the community, that was the time to get out of my head. Mm-hmm. You know, I had spent way too much time there.
Right.
So it was that clearing space for me.
Do you meditate now?
I do.
You don't run anymore, right?
I run, but not long distance. Yeah. Once I found yoga, I kind of shifted because I got to a point where running became almost abusive for me because if I wasn't running faster than I did the day before, then I was getting really down on myself. Right. And I had joined a running team, and so I was getting too competitive with it. Mm-hmm. So I made the conscious effort to slow down and concentrate my efforts in yoga, and it really kind of changed my thinking, mm-hmm. my way of being. I became softer. I mean, I'm still a powerhouse when I teach.
Oh, yeah. Oh, let me tell you.
But
everybody that goes to your classes
does that. I do meditate.
Yeah.
I do meditate. It's very important to me. I'm definitely nowhere near perfect at it. I don't think anyone is.
I don't think anyone is.
It's a journey.
There's probably two people in the world, maybe.
Yeah, it's a journey. And, you know, some days I can sit for 3 minutes, some days 5 minutes, some days 10, some days 20.
Yeah.
But I do make an effort every morning. I do have a meditation altar mm-hmm. set up in my house. And it's a collection of things that are really important to me. And what's important to me now are like memorabilia from my past, small little trinket gifts from my travels. So I've got rocks from Sedona, Arizona, the first yoga retreat I ever hosted. I have feathers that were given to me by my spiritual healer in Bali. Just eclectic things, sound bowls, just lots of different things.
I want a sound bowl.
Yes.
Where'd you get your sound bowl from?
I got it in Flagstaff, Arizona. Ooh. At this shop, this spiritual shop. And I picked up probably 8 to 10 sound bowls. And I kept trying and I kept trying. And I was like, no, it's not making sound for me. It's not making sound. What am I doing wrong? I'm terrible at this. This is not my thing.
It's hard to do.
And then I picked up this one beautiful brass sound bowl.
Yeah.
And it felt right in my hand. Mm-hmm. And I hit it one time. And then I started making circles, and it sang so loudly for me.
Wow.
And so I was like, this is it. This is my first bowl. And so I have that.
Cool.
It's beautiful.
So let's talk about your Bali trip.
Oh, my goodness. Life-changing.
I want to go to Bali so bad. I had a friend who lived in, she was in Bangkok. And so, like, on the weekends, she and her friends would just, like, travel everywhere that was close, you know, and she would be in Bali or wherever. I don't know. Just, like,
that's
so
thing
easily.
With, you know, with overseas that travel area. Is once you're over there, it's so much more accessible. Yeah. I head to Europe at the end of July, and I'm finding the same thing.
Yeah.
Europe that's a $20 flight from Brussels to Milan. And I'm like, I would do this every weekend.
Yeah, I know.
But in Bali, I found the same thing. A lot of the people, I made conversation with this man, we were kind of like wading water out on our surfboards off the cliffs of Bali. Like, what a dream is that?
Oh my gosh, that just sounds ridiculous.
To say that I've done that in life after coming from where I came from is like truly just a gift and a blessing.
Yeah.
And he lives in Australia. And if you live on the west coast of Australia, it is a 2-hour flight to Bali. So they're just spending the weekend in Bali. It's amazing.
Terrible life.
Yeah.
Terrible life. I guess it's like California and Hawaii.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of similar.
No, I've never been to California or Hawaii, but I've been to like these crazy exotic places across the world, which is wild.
I mean, I guess Hawaii and Bali, I'm sure they have similarities. All those kind of areas do. Yeah. You know, my husband lived in Maui for a couple years before we had met. He is a big windsurfer. That was what took him to Maui.
So cool. Windsurfing. That's on my bucket list to learn to do, windsurf.
Well, we can teach you.
Yes, we need
to
go.
We got all the stuff. So I actually learned 2 years ago.
We'll trade yoga sessions for windsurfing.
100%. Let's do it.
Done.
Yeah, done. Cool. This summer you're going to learn.
I love
it. I went with him twice to Maui, and it is just like super magical. But then we've heard that lately, we haven't been in like 5 years, maybe four, that it's just gotten kind of overrun, you know?
Mm-hmm.
All these little secrets are getting out. Yeah. I mean, not Maui was a secret, but it's just like, I don't know, people now can, I guess, work remotely easier. Maybe that's why.
Yeah.
There's not that much,
I could
you know,
see
there's
that.
Tourism, you know, in Maui, there's not really much industry. So what are you going to do there? You
all
know,
these tech companies.
Yeah.
You know, opening kind of call centers and
exactly.
stuff.
Yeah.
Yep. I hear you.
So Bali. So you were, I'm sorry.
It's fine. I love our little tangents.
Yeah.
So Bali. I went out to Bali. It's funny how it came to be. A woman in the Charleston community, in the Charleston yoga community, who I followed her on Instagram for a while, and she's followed me, and we've always just sent each other messages like, way to go, that event looked awesome. Just supporting each other and lifting each other up. I had only met her once in person before, and she sent me a message and she said, you know, I don't really know why, but I'm taking this trip to Bali for a yoga retreat and your name keeps coming to my mind. Would you want to go on this trip with me? And no hesitation, I was like, Y-E-S, send, send.
Yeah.
Because I'm just at a point in my life where, you know, I'm single. And I don't have like, I didn't have big roots keeping me tied. And it's a beautiful thing to have that ability and the flexibility in my career to be able to do something like that. So I said, this is a once of a lifetime opportunity. Yes, sign me
100%.
Up. I didn't really know what I was getting myself into, nor did I care. I knew there was yoga and it was Bali. And that was a dream.
And you also knew you weren't completely alone, and that you knew somebody who was going, and that also, you know, kind of gives you a sense of security.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. And I do like to travel alone.
Yeah.
I've noticed.
Yeah. Ooh.
So, but I went, and, you know, we had stops along the way. We spent a week in Thailand first. I was in Chiang Mai, which is in northern Thailand, and it's a very, very cool town. I should say city.
Yeah.
You know, this is, the word city to me, like, I think of skyscrapers. There's not skyscrapers.
Right, yeah, yeah.
But it is a city, lots of people. We were in Chiang Mai, and then we had a one-night layover in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, which was a city. Yeah. And it was very Americanized.
Oh.
The billboards were English. It really was surprising to me to come from Chiang
Mai. We've
taken over. Yeah. And then to be like Americanized again, it was almost like a culture shock. Yeah. And I was like, no, I'm not ready yet to come back to this.
Mm-mm.
So then luckily it was only a one-night stay, and then off to Bali we went. Now, the Bali retreat that I attended, I learned so much because it was a different type of practice than what I'm trained in and what I had previously been immersed in.
Mm-hmm.
So this was a Jivamukti retreat, and so a lot of chanting, a lot more spirituality, a lot of Sanskrit chanting, and it was a beautiful thing to be immersed into that practice in such a country that is so ritualistic.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have such a strong Hindi community, that it was beautiful to see their culture come to life every morning. They make offerings with incense and flowers every morning to the gods and goddesses of their religion, and they place it at every door. And you wake up to fresh incense and flowers, and it's just kind of like inviting this day, inviting this community, and a beautiful day of life.
That sounds magical.
And kind of turning your power over
and
acknowledging the gods or goddesses. And so to be amongst that culture and then in turn being able to learn all the ancient rituals of this yogic philosophy was really beautiful for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was...
Kind of changed your perspective on...
It changed a lot.
Yeah.
And I love chanting. Yeah. I love belting my heart out in a different language. I just do. It's a different kind of...
I like that too, actually.
Endorphin rush.
Yeah.
And half the time, half the people don't know the words, but you're just like, blah, oh. da, da, da.
Yeah.
And like, you're in it.
Yeah.
And the harmonium's going and everyone's spirits are lifted. And it just gets you out of your head and into, again, into the universe and just a sense of community.
And yeah, I was going to say, like, being in a group, just that the energy of the others, like, everybody doing it together. Is just like,
It raises the vibrations is what it does. When those voices combine, you can literally feel it vibrate. And it's unbelievable.
Wow.
So it was a very, very cool experience. And on top of that, I had... gone there just saying, be open. You know, this is a different type of practice, no expectations, and be open to transformation and change and shift. And what happened in Bali is, I tell you, it is a movie.
I was going to say, that sounds like what happened in Bali. It sounds like a movie.
Yeah.
Or a book or something.
It, so we, on the first night, the teacher that was leading the retreat, we had a yoga altar, and she asked us to place something of sentimental value on the yoga altar. And mind you, the yoga altar is in like a third floor open shala with like a wood thatch roof, and it's like overlooking the palm trees, and I mean, it's beautiful, but it's open air to the outside. And so I, you know, my mom passed away when I was 15 years old, which I kind of brushed over, but it was a pivotal moment in bringing me into drinking and drugging.
I mean,
with
not?
That loss and just being at that age. And so when I began to travel, I began to realize that I wanted to bring my mom's ashes with me wherever I went, because she didn't really get a chance to see the world. So it became my mission to like travel and see and bring her with me and leave pieces of her wherever I went, so she could see the world too. So on the yoga altar, I placed the bag of, a small bag of my mom's ashes. Actually, it was the remainder of my mom's ashes. It was in like a little satchel, and I placed that on the yoga altar. And so all week, all these pieces of ourselves were getting all of our vibrations and our good energy and our healing and our love and our laughter and our tears. And it was about halfway through the yoga retreat, I was coming to the shala for the afternoon practice, and the teacher came up to me. I was laying on my mat, and she put her hand on me, and immediately I knew something was wrong. And she said, your mom's ashes are gone. And I just, my heart dropped because in that moment, I was so attached to it, to this way that I wanted things to unfold and leave her here and leave her there. And I wasn't ready to let go of her. So for something to be taken before I was ready, I felt very robbed and very invaded. The monkeys.
What?
Run wild.
Freaking in monkeys. Bali. Oh,
and
my
they
gosh.
Run in packs. They are like a gang. They are a gang of monkeys. I mean, our showers were outside, and they would stand. They would perch and watch you shower. And you don't know if you're getting jumped by the monkeys or like what's going to happen, but you are watching them as you're washing your body. And you're like,
you have no idea.
Don't make any quick movements.
And you can't tell what they're going to do.
No idea.
By their facial expressions.
But there is a gang leader. There is. And so anyways, the monkeys took not only my mom's ashes, but many other things that were placed on the altar that were of sentimental value to other people. That night.
Monkeys.
I know, dang monkeys. That night, we actually went to a temple in Bali, and we watched this, what's the word I'm looking for? Authentic, aboriginal kind of like dance from the Balinese people. And it was a lot of chanting and just movements. And we had a piece of paper in English that told us what was happening in the story.
Oh, neat.
I am not kidding. In this story, the monkey was stealing from a woman. That was the storyline. He stole a ring from her and took it into the forest. And then he came back and he stole the woman. And then eventually the dance goes on and the monkey returns the woman and then he returns the ring. And so my teacher looks at me and she goes, Kate, I bet you we're going to find that bag of ashes. This is like an omen. And I'm like, there's no way, there's no way. I look up from my piece of paper and directly across this arena, think of like a tennis match arena sort of thing. Mm-hmm. I look across and this woman has her big brimmed sun hat resting on her knees. And on the brim of her sun hat embroidered is her name. And it is my mother's name staring right back at me. And I'm like, you just can't make this up.
I just get chills.
Yeah, this is like crazy. We get back to our retreat center that night and Made was the groundskeeper. Every fourth man in Bali is named Made because they used to name their children based off the number they were born. So the first man was named, say, Monday. Second man, Tuesday, Wednesday. And then Made. So like every fourth guy is named Made. So Made is the groundskeeper. When he found out that my mom's ashes went missing, he was like, I will make this my mission to find them. We get back to the yoga shala and he has found the bag of ashes. Mind you, it's basically completely empty minus like a teaspoon. There's a tiny bit left. So this is like all coming together. And I'm like, you cannot make this up. You just cannot write this story.
No.
And so I was like, I was heading to where, so I was like, okay, this is enough to take to Italy with me in July because that's where I'm headed next. And I'll leave it in Italy.
Yeah.
And that'll be the end of the story.
Right.
But my heart kept tugging me. And I'm like, this is a sign. I think my mom wants to stay in Bali.
Aww.
I think this is a thing.
Yeah.
And I think this is a lesson of detachment for me to let go.
Right.
It's been a long time.
Right.
So I decided to let her go and I went back to that temple and stood over the wall that overlooked these big, big cliffs just right out into the ocean. And my teacher came with me and we chanted and we put ashes in our hands and we rubbed our hands together.
Mm-hmm.
And then on an om, we let the ashes go into the wind and it carried them out to sea. And that was the strongest om I've ever heard, just two of us. But it sounded like 300 people.
Wow.
And it was such a loud om that a woman who is Indian, you know, she had on her traditional Indian attire, came and tapped me on the shoulder afterwards and said, I hope you don't mind. I was watching. That was so beautiful. And I think I know what just happened, but where did you learn to om? And I said, my teacher, right here next to me.
Yeah.
And she was like, it sounded so powerful.
Wow.
And it was just a really, really... Bali will always have a piece in my heart now.
That is,
and I will go back, you know.
Yeah.
And hopefully if I have kids, bring them there.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, maybe host a retreat there one day.
Yes, and I will come.
Yes,
because I want to go there.
Because Bali has
so
all, a piece in me always. So it's really, really special to me.
That is the craziest story I've ever heard.
I know. Sorry it took up time, but it's just
no.
too good
oh my
not
gosh.
To share.
That is the greatest story
it's
ever.
Too good not
and
to
it's
share.
Just so it just shows that I don't know, I think a part of me for a long time has just discounted certain things, you know, as being a coincidence.
Mm.
And I think finally I am coming to terms that that's not the case, you know, in life. And I need to be more open to experiences that they're not just by accident, you know,
yeah.
Which like that was not, there's no way.
There's no way.
There's no way.
I think that, you know, there's a plan and there's a road and there's a trail. And we all get to make decisions on a daily basis. And I don't think there's a right or wrong decision as to where we're led. You know, if it's the wrong decision, quote unquote, then it's a lesson. And it eventually leads us back to our path in the first place. And I think that when things roll out so easily and so effortlessly that it is just proof that we're living our truth and we're on the right path. And so if we can learn or maybe find a little bit of belief in thinking that the universe guides us, then there's so many things that are open to interpretation and things that could change us for the better.
Yeah.
You know, You know, I don't think that yoga happened on accident either. Right. You know, yeah. I think I ran past that studio on purpose.
Right.
I think I auditioned at Hilo on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
I think it all happens not on our time. You know, I think nothing happens on our time. We can hope and we can wish, but I think the universe gives us things when the time is right.
Right. You can't force it.
You can't force it.
Yeah.
Because if yoga would have been given to me years ago, it wouldn't have been the same.
Mm-mm.
And I wouldn't have changed my life. And hopefully what I believe to be doing is helping other people change theirs.
Yeah.
So I think everything comes when the time is supposed to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And Bali, to me, was just proof of that.
Totally.
And such a healing opportunity for me for something I had held on to for so long.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I learn on and off the mat every day. It's a balance of learning when to take and when to give, when to hold on and when to let go.
Mm-hmm.
And listening to those intuitive moments and letting our guts guide us. But getting still enough to listen to what our gut is telling us in the first place is the biggest yoga practice of all.
The biggest challenge.
It is.
For sure. Yeah.
It's so hard.
Mm-hmm.
Because human beings are analytical. It's part of our makeup. So we want to overanalyze everything instead of just trusting in guidance.
You're preaching to the choir.
You know it.
Analyze everything.
Oh, yeah. Everything.
Everything.
Give me an example.
Podcasting.
Yes.
Well, I'm an artist. I mean, I've been an artist for 7 years and professionally. And I overanalyze everything that I paint, you know?
Mm.
And I think that, so when I got sick, there was a lot going on. I just started my art business. I had a studio downtown and I was in my mid to late 20s. And I just had all these people in my ear trying to tell me what to do and how I was supposed to run my business, which is like the most annoying thing to me in my personality is anybody telling me what to do.
Yes. Like, I can resonate with that.
I will clench up and then I end up exploding, which I've gotten better about this. I had to learn, like, me getting sick was a huge healing process.
Similar
to you, going through different diseases, and it brought you to where you are now, which I would not be where I am now. There's no way. Like, I would have never come. I never cared about health or nutrition or wellness or, I mean, I hadn't even really gotten into yoga. I mean, I did yoga, but I didn't do it for the same, like, with the same mindset, I guess, you know? Where was I going with that? I don't know.
How you overanalyze.
Yeah, and now I overanalyze, being an artist, yeah. See, this is me going on a tangent. And so I just overanalyze everything, which I think can be, as an art, it screws with my head.
Yeah.
Because I'll overanalyze how I'm painting something, you know, what should I paint?
What came to mind when you were saying that is, I think that we're given things that we can handle mm-hmm. in life. And obviously, like, you're a strong, amazing, powerful woman. And you got this autoimmune disease and it was perhaps part of your path because now it's brought you here today
totally.
To be able to voice what you went through and share what you went through to help other people who might be experiencing the same thing.
Totally.
And while it was like really unfortunate and nearly killed you, mine nearly killed me, you know, I think that like
it's like the silver lining or
it's,
whatever.
It is. It's like, this is, okay, I was given this. I got through it. Now, how can I give back? How mm-hmm. can I reach my hand behind me to the person who's coming right behind and who 100%. Needs that help?
Yeah.
And so it's like, nothing's on accident.
Right.
I think that like, even the hard things in life are put in front of us on purpose to lead us in our direction, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
Because I wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be here.
And I had that same, you know, those same kind of thoughts in, you know, why me? Like, why did this happen to me and
right.
not everybody else? Like, these people were doing the same thing I was doing. They're living their life the same way, right. you know, X, Y, and Z.
And just mad at the world.
mad at the world, but at the same time, if it had been somebody else who had gone through what I went through, they might not have come through, because of the way my personality is.
Correct.
You know, they might not have come through the way I did to be able to help others, you know, to share my story. So
I agree 100%. And I hear you on the overanalyzing. It's part of our makeup.
I'm getting better at it.
Even after I teach a class, I'm still like, oh my God, did they like it? Did they not like it? Uh-huh. Did I do something wrong? Oh my God, did I miss that posture? Yeah. No one's saying anything. Did they like it? And I'm like, Kate, this is not about you. Yeah. Like, you come to hold space for people to do what they need to do.
Right.
And because someone
didn't turn... You're just
leading
them. Yeah. You know?
Because someone didn't turn around and wasn't like, oh my God, this was the best yoga class ever. Then I'm like overanalyzing things in my head, how I'm a terrible teacher and I'm not supposed to do this. And like the hamster wheel goes. And then all of a sudden, like,
You have to catch it.
You have to.
Because otherwise, it will keep on going.
Yeah.
And
always.
And it spirals down.
Yeah.
But then every day is different. Like last week, I felt really powerful. And then, I don't know, yesterday, I was just kind of like, case of the Mondays, I guess.
Mondays. Or the moon phase.
Or the moon phase. Oh, I should have looked at that.
There's a new moon Gemini or something.
Mm-hmm. I need to keep up with more of that. Mm-hmm. I feel like, because it totally is, usually on point.
Yeah.
So what do you have planned for the future?
Oh, goodness. I have a lot. I always have ideas spinning. I have this, you know, beautiful position with Hilo right now that has really just been a dream come true as such a new teacher. Mm-hmm. Like, every day I'm grateful. Every day I am so humbled that, like, this has been trusted for me to lead because I am like, really?
Yeah, are you sure about this?
Are you sure?
Are you sure?
But I try not to take it for granted. And I try and go above and beyond and just keep building the yoga program to the best of my ability. Mm-hmm. And in order to do that, I make sure that I'm constantly exploring and bringing back teachings wherever I go. So even though Bali was a retreat, I brought everything that I experienced, the movements and the mindset and the way of being in the simplicity of living back with me. And I tried to pass that on. Mm-hmm. And so at the end of July, I'm going to another retreat in Northern Italy. Mm-hmm. And this was very serendipitous as well, how I met this teacher. Yeah. I was in Savannah, Georgia for my last birthday. And I happened to pass by this studio that had the same kind of like white clean line ambiance of Hilo. So I poked my head in there and I'm like, hey, what's going on in here? And she said, come to tomorrow's yoga class. She's our best instructor. Her name is Meg. And I said, great, I'll be here. So me and my birthday crew went. We showed up for yoga. And when I walked in, she said, what's your name? I'll put you in class. And I said, my name's Kate Moon. And she said, I know who you are. I follow you on Instagram. And I have friends that live in Charleston. And they say, I got to take Kate Moon's class. You got to take her class when you're in town. Cool. And so I took her class and loved her way of movement. Oh. She has a dance background, so it's very fluid. Ooh. And I love that. Yeah. My practices become more fluid.
Yeah.
Just because that's the way I feel.
Mm-hmm. Not too stiff, you know?
Yeah, not too stiff or regimented. I'm like, how do you feel?
Yeah.
Move that way. And so I started following her on Instagram, and she's hosting this retreat in Italy.
Cool.
So I'm going to learn from her, and I'll bring that back with me.
That's awesome.
I also have a yoga retreat that I'm hosting in September. It's called Rise, and that is on the Osa Peninsula of Costa Rica.
Terrible place.
It's terrible. Sure. I mean, it's dreadful.
Why would you choose it?
I don't even know. I don't know what I was thinking.
That sounds magical.
It is. And so the idea of Rise, my retreat last year in Sedona, Arizona was called the same thing. Because in the space that I hold at Hilo, there's only so much time and so much work to be done in 50-minute classes. And my goal with Kate Moon Yoga is, okay, here's what happens on the mat. This is how you move your body. This is how we unleash tension and distress. And now you have all these feelings that we've let out. Now let me walk you through what I did with all of the emotions and how I came to terms with how I felt. Mm-hmm. And so Rise, we go through a lot of self-study, guided work. Svadhyaya is self-study in Sanskrit, and it is one of the limbs of yoga, right? So it's one of physical asana, physical yoga is only one of eight limbs. There's so many other pieces to yoga. Wow. And so Svadhyaya, self-study, is another limb of yoga that I lead through Cape Moon Yoga. And so really I walk people through ways to look at themselves on paper. Because I think that we have become so immune to pointing the finger at other people or other things. Well, he made me feel this way, and this happened to me, and woe is me. I got this disease, and like just playing the blame game that so often we neglect looking at our part in situations, in relationships, in circumstances. So I want to know, how did I show up, and what, in what light or non-light am I showing up in these relationships or these circumstances? Because I can't change other people. I have no power over other people. But what I can do is I can change myself. So we look at situations and people that maybe we're holding negative emotions to or resentments towards, and we look at that on paper. What happened? Who did it happen with? And how did I show up in that situation? Did I show up angry? Did I show up jealous? Did I show up hurt? All these different kind of characteristics. And then once we kind of look at all of that on paper, we start to see a pattern in all of these situations and relationships of how we continue to show up. And only then can we start to look at, well, how do, what's the opposite action? Because I don't want to show up jealous. I hate jealous people. But here I am actually kind of being jealous. So what's the opposite action, and how can I continue into life going forward? So we just kind of look at ways of becoming aware of self and how to show up better.
Wow.
So we do a lot of that work on my Rise retreats. And then, of course, we have a lot of fun. So zip lining through the rainforest, horseback riding to waterfalls, and then rappelling down waterfalls, and surfing, and tons of relaxing beach time. So it's not all work. It's definitely play too.
Well,
definitely
it's good work. I mean, that's, it's self-work, and we constantly have to do that. I think to stay sane in the world, to try to be happy, to try to be helpful and productive to others. I mean,
100%.
You have to do the work.
We have to the work if we want to grow and evolve and become
and grow and
the best versions of ourselves. And, you know, I think that, you know, we have this, quote, one life to live. And people come and go. Partners come and go. Family comes and goes. Unfortunately, it's the circle of life. But we spend our whole lives with ourselves. So why don't we want to get to know ourselves as much as we want to get to know other people?
Wow.
Because I have to spend my whole life with myself, so I better damn well like myself.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I want to know myself as much as I possibly can so I can be the best version and really enjoy spending time with myself.
Wow. I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's my mentality.
I think that sounds great. I need to rub off on me a little.
Yeah, yeah.
So to do the retreat, how do you, how does somebody go on the retreat?
Yeah, so on my Instagram handle, which is just Cape Moon Yoga, pretty easy to remember, you can have the link to my website. My website, same thing, capemoonyoga.com.
It's pretty easy.
And you can click on the retreats page, and you can read about it. You can send me an email, capemoonyoga@gmail.com. Cool. Everything's super easy. And I have a full info packet I can send out. There's tons of information on my website, but if you're looking for even more detail, then I can send you a full-on information packet. I have two spots open. Yeah.
Oh,
so gosh. I've been very blessed with very enthusiastic clients. So there's 16 of us already, and I have two more spots, and we'll see what happens. So if you are interested and you're listening, definitely shoot me a message. Just so I know you're interested. That way, if I get one sign up, I can tell you there's only one spot left or something. So that way you can jump on the opportunity. But there's payment plans and all that, because I want it to be accessible to everyone. So I'm willing to work with anyone and everyone, you know. Everyone needs the yoga.
Everybody needs
And everyone should get an opportunity to do it in a beautiful place like Costa Rica.
Yes, please.
So Yes.
Costa Rica, Bali.
Yes.
Any of those places.
Yeah.
Okie doke. Well, I guess we'll wrap it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this has been fun.
It's been so fun. And you're so easy to talk to.
Well, good. I'm glad.
I know.
And I hope you're...
I feel like we can talk for hours.
The Manuka... I know. I could, honestly. I know. But I don't know if
people, I don't think people want to listen for hours.
People's attention spans sometimes are not as... You know.
Meditate more, people.
I know. More meditation. More meditation. So moral of this whole story is...
Yes. Meditate.
Yoga.
Yoga.
Self-reflection.
Self-reflection.
Self-love.
Self-love. I love that.
All those things.
Be the best person you can be.
Be the best
you can, you know, be. And rub off on others.
Yeah. Bring some light into this world.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's no better healing. You know, you talk about healing through food, and that's kind of your thing, and I think that's beautiful. Healing through me is through, like, self-study within myself and bringing it into the community. And I think there's no more powerful healing tool than one human being helping another.
100%.
And so by sharing our stories and making them vocal, mm-hmm. it just gives permission to other people to do the same thing. Mm-hmm. Like I say, let it all out. We're not alone. Yeah. Voice your story, because you don't know if the person beside you has the same damn thing going on. Mm-hmm. So moral of the story, get loud, live loud.
Get loud.
Be good.
Oh, I love it.
Okay. Be good.
Okay. Peace and plants.
Peace and plants. I love it. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Wow. I absolutely love her. I could seriously sit and chat with her all day long. So let me know if y'all want that podcast, because I'll have her back over and we'll just chit chat and record it. Oh my gosh. She seriously is a true testament to the resilience of the human spirit. You know, no matter how long we've been suffering, we can heal. We can overcome our demons and find a meaningful life that speaks to us. And I think it also shows that we should not be ashamed of where we've been. Our past does not define us, but it does help shape us. Our stories and, you know, what we've been through and overcome can help others who are going through their own experiences, whether they're the same or not. I love the analogy of the lotus flower, which is a symbol commonly used in yoga practice describing transformation. We can rise from the murky, muddy depths to become a beautiful flower that's a beacon of hope and light for the world. And I definitely feel like Kate is just that. If we can just go forth, I think, into the world with an open heart and mind, you know, who knows what we'll find, right? So, namaste, my friends. And of course, peace and plants.